take a seat. Shabbat Emor. The portion we had this morning was from Vayikra, Leviticus 23:1-8. From the Haftarah, it was the prophet Ezekiel, chapter 44:15-27. And from the Messianic writings, one of those quite famous parables of the so-called wheat and tares, that was Matachel, the Sola of Matachel, the Good News, chapter 13:24-30. We are arriving now in our walk through the Torah to what I describe as the cuddly end of Vayikra. It's the nice end of Vayikra. We've left now, we're leaving behind all the blood, all the sacrifices, all those kind of yucky bits that we all today look at and just think, oh, it's not for me today, it's just too horrible, too bizarre, too revolting, I don't understand what's going on. And we arrive now at the cuddly bit of Vayikra, Leviticus 23. I say it's the cuddly bit because you know what? It's the festival bit, right? Who doesn't like a good festival? We all like festivals, don't we? It's the nice bit. It's the bit we understand. It's the food and the drink and it's the fellowship. It's the love and it's these times that we all spend together. And you know what? Even if we were worshiping this morning, I jotted it down here just now before I forgot it. It just occurred to me, who wouldn't want to follow the God who says, have a rest? You know, that sounds like the kind of God I want to follow. The first thing Adam and Hava do, you know, they've gone through the creation week on the last day there, on the Friday, Adam and Hava are created, and they've not done anything, they haven't even worked, and the first thing God says to them, have a rest on me. Yeah? Chill. Guys, chill. You know, it's been a busy week for you. Oh no, it hasn't. It's been a busy week for me. But you have a rest anyway. Then what a wonderful God we serve. Have a rest. It's the cuddly bit of it all. And yet, you know, it's kind of strange. What we discover about mankind, what we discover also, not so much about us as Jews, although to be honest, we've done this often enough in our history too, but what we discover about mankind is that when God says to us, these are the festivals of Adonai, these are the festivals of the Lord, he doesn't even say, as we know, these are the festivals of the Jews. He says, these are my festivals. They belong to the one true God. And if he's the one true God, he is not just the God of the Jews. He's the God of all mankind. Amen? And he says, these are my festivals. Beginning with Shabbat, but Pesach and all the rest as he goes through there. And yet, isn't it a crazy thing that when we look around our world right now, we see so few people actually keeping the festivals of God? Dare I say, even the ones who supposedly say they believe in the God of Israel don't keep his festivals. Ouch. What is it with human beings? What is it with humankind? What is it with us? And God says, look, I'm giving you these wonderful festivals of joy and food, and they're cuddly and they're lovely, and they're going to be awesome times. And the first thing we do is, yeah, you know what? I'll make my own. I'll do my own. I rather fancy the ideas of having my own festivals. You know, whether it's big fat men in red gowns or whatever it is, you know, I'll make my own festivals, thank you very much, because I think I can do it better. Strange kind of thing, isn't it, really? But we see this all over the world. People have organised their own kind of religion. Oh, did I say organised? Uh-oh. Because you say, what, when we get to these passages like Vayikra 23, it's the kind of passage that most people read, they look at it and they go, oh, this is too organised, isn't it? This is organised religion. Uh-oh, radar starts going off. Organised religion, let's head for the door. Let's get out of here, let's head to the hills. No one likes organised religion. Have you heard that before? Someone says, no, I don't want organised religion. But what do you want, disorganised religion? Seriously? What do you want to do? Come in and do your own thing while someone's slaughtering a bull in that corner? Maybe someone passing a baby through the fire down in this corner and we'll have a few Easter eggs around this bend here. I mean, what do we want to do? We want to have to do our own stuff. Well, imagine the chaos that we'd all be in. And someone else would get up and say, yeah, I think this. And someone would get up and say, I think that. And then we go, that's nice that you think that, but is it true? I doubt people want disorganised religion. Frankly, I think it would be the biggest turn-off that we could ever see in our modern society. You know, right at the end of the book of Judges, it says this, each person did what was right in their own eyes. And you know what? That is not an accolade of civil and religious advance. It's a condemnation of moral decay and a breakdown of righteous civil behaviour. When everyone does what they want to do, it's a mess. It is not fun. The truth of the matter is, really, when you peel it all back, none of us actually really want disorganised life and existence. We don't want disorganisation. What we actually react to and why people do these things is we do not want anyone telling us what to do, let alone God. We don't want people telling us what to do. You know, there's someone I know who will remain nameless, who when they get told that they have to leave work at 10 o'clock at night because they're shutting the place down, doesn't like it and rebels against it and kicks against it and doesn't want to go home. Now you would think to yourself at that point, right? My employer is looking after me. They want me to sleep. They want me to be nice and good the next morning so I can come back to work and be fresh and refreshed and then do it even better the next time around. And yet somehow we don't want anyone to be telling us what we want to do, right? We don't want an anarchic life, we want an order in our life, but you know what we really want? We want our own order. Thank you very much. I want to choose. I want to decide who has control over my life. I want to have total order. A way to create my life in the way that I want to create it to be. And yet, honestly, who has that kind of order in their lives? Whoever has that kind of organized, created life, which each one of us in our little dreams of fantasy think, if only it was like this, this and this, wouldn't it be wonderful and it would be glorious and so on. The parable we heard about this morning illustrates exactly the principle that I'm just telling you. The parable of the wheat and the tares. You know what? They're going along and they're sowing good wheat. That's what the farmer does. And then someone else comes along during the night. And the farmer's got his back turned, and what do? They're sowing weeds, they're sowing problems and issues and situations, they're sowing nonsense and chaos into your life, which I think is a brilliant parable to illustrate exactly for most of us what our lives are really all about. A field that produces, yes, some good crops, but frankly produces some pretty lousy stuff too. Now people have often applied this parable to congregational life. But I want to go in a different direction with it this morning. It's not just a congregational life, it is about life in general. None of us have fields that look that good. It's true in life, it's true in fields, it's true for the farmers, it's true for each and every one of us. No one. We may plow our field as we want, but it is the Lord who sows. And we may think we've got control of the tractor and we've got control of the oxen or whatever it is you're using to break up your field. And you may think you've got nice neat furrows and it's all going to be wonderful and everything, the crop is going to be fantastic, and yet which one of us does not begin to get even a little bit of their way through their human lives, and we begin to see those weeds beginning to jump up here, there and everywhere. And those little furrows which are so neat and so precise, and we thought everything was going to be fine and the only crop that we were going to produce in our life was going to be of good stuff, and suddenly we decide and see it's way, way different from what we expected. I suspect most of us when we were younger started our lives with great plans for the future. You know, you were going to study X, Y and Z. You were going to become a doctor in this or a master's in that, or you were going to become a master plumber or a master carpenter or whatever it may be. You said you were going to travel here, you were going to travel there, you were going to see the Northern Lights, you were going to shake wings with a penguin, you were going to do all these things, right? You were going to swim with the dolphins, because that's what everyone wants to do. Probably you thought to yourself, I shall marry. I shall have 3.2 children. Especially the 0.2, because that's the real pain. Live happily ever after and ride my white horse into the sunset. You know, it's very childlike. You know, we're laughing at it, but we kind of all have these fantasies and these dreams and of how our lives are going to be. Yes, it's the neat little furrows on our field. Ask yourself the reality, and this depends on your stage of life, of course, but I suspect that for most of us, our lives have not quite turned out in the way that we thought they were going to be. Such childlike fantasies rarely become reality for most of us. Life takes its course. We find we have very little control over it. We find the weeds begin to sprout up, frustrated so often by our need for, shall we say, reactive responses in our life rather than the proactive responses we thought and desired that we thought we would always have. Masters of our own destiny, choosing where our paths were going to go, and then halfway through we look back and we realize, frankly, the chaotic route that we'd taken even to that point resembled nothing like what we thought our lives were going to be. Our life fields have become the wheat and the tares fields. Our fields of our lives become the mixtures as a reality and experience of the good, the bad and the ugly begin to rear their heads and form us and shape us and frame us. Our life shapes its own way. And we begin to understand that bigger forces are at work. Bigger forces in our lives. That we discover suddenly we thought we were masters of our destinies, and no, we're not. We're tossed here and there and everywhere. Things crash in and change direction, and we're now doing this, we thought we would do that, and suddenly everything is over its head. Whoever thought? Whoever thought one day when you were 5 years old that you'd marry a Moldovan? Who would have thought that? Right? That wasn't even on your radar. I'm sure your primary school teacher didn't say to you, you know what, one day, I think a Moldovan would be a really good catch for you. No, I'm thinking actually of a doctor, you know? Yeah, that'd be good. Or a horse trainer or something. You know? The dreams of what we think our lives are all about, and yet we then, as we get through them, discover the reality is so different. And his own path. How our lives turn out, where we're at right now. We take stock of where we're at right now. Whether we're disappointed or whether we're happy or whether we're pleased with that but not with that. However they've turned out, what we begin to discover right now, that all of this, if we're honest with ourselves, is merely a sign that God is actually the one who is in control of it all and not us. And let's be honest for a second, because it's easy, isn't it, to just sit back and just say, yes, but God is in control and everything is sorted out. It's all hunky-dory for him because he's God and therefore it has to be. Really? Really? If you want to talk about disappointment, if you want to talk about crushed hopes, if you want to talk about things not turning out the way you thought they were going to, plans for the future dashed, let's look no further than God himself, who, having created mankind in its perfect form, placed mankind in a garden where food was in abundance, where everything was beautiful, everything was perfect, it was without sin, it was without war, it was without chaos and everything else. It was ordered in a beautiful, beautiful way, and mankind could walk with God. You want hopes for the future dash? Go back to the garden and look what Adam and Chava did. Look what we humans did against God. The one who has given us everything that we could ever possibly have wanted. In freedom and abundance. And we go, bam, we don't want that. Actually, you know what? I want to choose what I do. Talk about things not working out as you thought they were going to work out. Talk about the hopes for your future. How you were going to just continue to love mankind and everything would be wonderful and you'd walk with mankind day after day and love them to bits and they'd love you back to bits and what a wonderful relationship it would all be, and wham, we just slap God around the face and say, you know what, I'm done with this, I'm out. Incredible. Love rejected, spurned by rebellious mankind. Even for God, it did not turn out as he wanted it to turn out. Just like our lives. Because I'm sure even Adam and Eve at that point, in their rebellion against God, even they were thinking, you know what, it's going to be so much better when I'm in control of my life. You know, I am the ruler and master of my destiny now. I have chosen the path that I'm going to walk. It's going to be way better than what you've come up with, God, because who knows what you've got planned. I can work it out for myself. It's going to be way better. Tell that to the drug addict. Tell that to the homeless sleeping on the streets of Norwich. Tell that to the people who are living in deep pain. Tell that to the people whose emotional lives, psychological lives, physical lives are a mess. Tell that to the people who then suddenly get unemployed and everything falls apart, their marriages dissolve and they find themselves living on the street destitute. That wasn't in their plans. It's good when we're in control. I think we're somewhat deceiving ourselves in all of this. You know what? God gave us the freedom to grow up. He gave us that freedom. He took the risk of rejection in it all because his love was so powerful for us. Yes, it was a risk that we took advantage of and we did throw it back in his face. We thought we could be lords of our own destinies. We thought we could be lords over our own lives. And all we discovered was chaos. You want to be lords of our lives? Tell that to the people of Hiroshima. Tell that to the people of the genocide through the ages. Tell that to the people who are suffering from the sins of other people. Because we want to be the ones in control. We want to be the masters of our own destiny, to do what we want to do. And all we can ever do is hate each other and kill each other. With the freedom that God has given us. See, from God's side, he gave us this space in his love. That's all he wanted for us, to follow him. All he wanted for us was to choose him. And yet from his perspective, it did not turn out as he wanted. All of his plans dashed at that moment for what he wanted to do for mankind. Gone. Up in a puff of smoke, gone. Did not turn out as he wanted. His dreams, his plans. God took the risk. He wanted us to stay close to him, but we decided to walk away. That was our choice. And yet, we've never stopped choosing. Today, we still choose. That choice has never changed all the way through the millennia, whether we choose to stay close to God, whether we choose to accept actually right now that his plan for your life, for his structure, or shall we say his organization of our lives, is a much better way to approach life than trying to be in control ourselves, which frankly, as we've already said, is an impossible dream. No one is in that control of their lives. No one has that amount of control. Now you could be cycling along the road and think you're in control of your life and still have an ambulance called out. No one's in control. Fuck in ourselves. Things happen to us as much as we are stealing events in our lives. It's an impossible dream. But it's the same choice that they had right at the very beginning of humanity. The same choice, it's never changed. Are you actually going to say to Adonai, to God, I trust that your plans for my life are that good that I will not fight against them. I will not resist. I will bend the knee before you. And I will accept your way. The ultimate and only way. Why is that a better thing to do? Because you know what? You do not know what is going to happen tomorrow. You don't. Do you not know tomorrow whether you will metaphorically win the lottery? I say metaphorically because none of you are doing it, I know. Or, heaven forbid, that you could walk under a bus. No one knows. You simply do not know that. But you know what? There is one who does. There is one who does know what is going to happen tomorrow. And that is why ultimately when we look at the scenario before us, it makes so much sense to actually say to God, I trust in you because you know my destiny. You know my tomorrow. You know where I am going. You know ultimately why I am here and what the purpose of my life is. Because I most certainly do not. We do not ultimately know. We cannot know. It's beyond our knowledge. But God does know. And you know, the Torah is littered for us with those whose lives were punctuated with events that were simply not part of their plans, but absolutely were God's plans. Think of Abraham and Sarah, a late stage of their life, thinking they were at that point going to ride into the sunset on their white horse. The end of life is beckoning, and what happens to them one day is the Lord turns up and says, by the way, Sarah, about this childless thing. She's going, you're kidding me, right? And Lord says, you know what, I know you're 90. Yeah, I know. But you know what my plan is? And she's going, yes. My plan is, you're going to have a baby. And Sarah's going, no, you're having a laugh. I'm 90. Right? I'm retired. I'm done with all of that. I haven't even been humanly possible, biologically able to have a child for the last 50 years. And I was going, yeah, it's a small thing. Yeah, we'll forget that. You're going to have a son. And of course, we know, Sarah falls about laughing in her incredulity at that point, thinking this is just all wrong. I'm at the wrong stage of life to have a kid. Are you kidding me? And yet, she did have a son. It wasn't on Sarah's to-do list. Certainly wasn't on her bucket list. She thought she got to the end of that one, and she laughed. But as one Jewish commentator put it, and I love this quote, it's really good, I loved it when I read this week, she said this: that day when Sarah laughed, the true meaning of laughter was revealed. It wasn't a laugh of mockery, but a laughter of possibility and surrender to God. It's a laughter that is a joy of submitting to God and his plans and not to our own, as if we truly had any way to be our own masters, because life happens to us as much as we steer it. And learning to trust in God's plans for your life truly, ultimately, is the only way of wisdom. But boy, don't we resist this urge to surrender to God. I can stand here and I can say, people, you need to yield to God, you need to surrender to God, you need to wave that white flag and say, okay, I'm not able to control my life, come into my life, you take my life and take hold of it. And instantly in us, this is kind of, oh yeah, but what is God going to do with my life? Right? What is he going to do with my life? I don't want to go and live in Timbuktu. I don't want to live in Tibet. And there's that little bit in the back of my mind that's going, yeah, but he might send me there. I can't even speak Tibetan, let alone know, I don't know what they do there. Does Tesco's even exist in Tibet? I don't know. I mean, what am I going to do? Send me somewhere warm, Lord. He goes, that's not really in my plans. Tibet's a nice place, by the way. You know, but we just resist that call to surrender to God, because we cannot even begin to believe that what he might do with us is actually going to be so good that it's going to be better than what's already happening in my life. And we think, well, okay, my life may not be perfect, but at least I can tweak it and I can do this and I can make it a little bit better. I'll try to and try to keep some control over it, but frankly, surrender, who knows what is going to happen. And the preacher in Ecclesiastes, who's faced all of this, he's gone through his life at that point. When we're trying to frame our lives, the preacher at the end of Ecclesiastes says this, I'll read it to you. It's his summary of his life. Having attempted to control it all and to rule it and to be the one who makes all the decisions, at the end of it he summarizes it like this. He says this is Ecclesiastes 12:13. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter, he says, of our lives. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. That's astonishing. He's not even saying, try and be happy, try and win the lottery, try and do this, live in a sunny country. He's not even interested in any of those things. And ultimately, when you strip it all bare, he says, ultimately, the only thing we can do as mankind, just do what God says. Do what he says. So this is the whole duty of mankind. This is what we were born to do, created to do. Do what God says, not do what you want to do. I want to paraphrase it into today's words. We might say, be faithful to God, do what you're called to do, continue to preach and speak the truth, to live a righteous life, and then leave the rest up to Him. I'm not preaching faithism, I'm not into passivity, but we do have to yield our lives to the one who does know what our lives are meant to be, who does know what the value and meaning of our lives is. So often we do not. Yeah, we have no idea, often. You know, when God is building things into our lives over a span maybe of 10 or 20 years, a skill for this or a skill for that and this, that and the other. I had no concept when I first came into leading a congregation and was ordained as a rabbi. I had no plan in my head of that. That's not what I was saying when I was 4 in the creche. I want to be a rabbi when I grow up. No, I want to be a train driver or astronaut like anyone else, right? I have no concept of being this or doing this. And yet what I discovered when I then got to that point where the choice was made to follow through this line, what I discovered was suddenly everything that God had been building into my life up to that point made sense. It was all there, waiting to be released. I wouldn't have planned it that way. I couldn't have made it that way. But God knew. Because He does know what our lives are all about. He knows the meaning and purpose of our lives. As Yeshua stated it in this way, He says, seek first the kingdom of God, and everything else will be added unto you. Everything. The only concern in your life today, right now, is to seek God and His kingdom, His rule in your life. That is it. And God says, I'll give you everything else. I'll give you everything else. Everything else will be added to you. Just seek God first. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding, is what the writer of the Proverbs paraphrased it in again. That is the path of true wisdom, of true shalom. If we can't do God's work for Him, only He can achieve that, but He will do it through us if we yield to Him and stop trying to work out our lives as if we were the ones who were ultimately in control of it all. Yes, that means the path that you walk will go in strange directions at times that you never ever predicted was going to be a path that you will walk. Yes, it will happen to you. But if we trust God in all of this, that He's seen it from afar and He knew it, and we can have that confidence that even on those paths, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Because your staff or spirit is with me as I walk that path. Sure that for most of you, your paths even today are very different from anything you had concepted it to be when you were younger. None of us have lives in straight direction without the bangs and knocks and unexpected twists and turns. The only way to make sense of it all is to bow before the one who does know your tomorrow from your today and your yesterday. So I'll wrap it up with a question for you. Are you in the place now where you expected to be at this stage of your life? The place right now, is that where your plans were when you were 15, 18? Has life dealt you stuff that you weren't expecting? You were knocked here and there, maybe even in your childhood. You look back and you just think, what was that all about, Lord? And we can grow bitter. We can be angry. We can fight back against this because we don't like it. We don't want to accept it. And yet for each and every one of us, our lives are what they are. The way forward in understanding what our lives are meant to be and the meaning of our lives is not to fight against it. It's a pointless fight. You will just end exhausted. There's no answer to that fight. but to trust the one who does know. So your life has been knocked here and there. So you're not in the place you thought you were going to be. Join the club. I'm starting one. Come and join it. But that's ultimately not the point. When you reach the end of that race, when the summary of your life lays before you, will Yeshua be able to say to you, as he does in Matthew chapter 25, good and faithful servant. You've done well. You were faithful to God through your life. Despite everything else that was there to knock you off course and try and drag you here and drag you there and give you this problem and that problem, this situation, despite all of that, and all of it is inevitable. It is inevitable, people. You just listen to the news sometimes and you listen to parents, you know, who are holding a baby in their arms that was deformed at birth or something, and they're thinking, why? There are no real answers to those kind of questions, but the point is there is one who does know, and the way is to trust the one who does know. Will we get to the end of it all then having at least maybe some understanding, and Yeshua says, you kept it, you kept going, you didn't stop, you kept the faith, you were faithful to God, you held on through the ups and the downs and all of it, despite all of those inevitable situations. Ultimately, the question comes, does your life ultimately give an expression of the will of God? Did your life give his will meaning and substance? Because that is the only thing that counts. And I mean the only thing. Because, you know, there's enough of us in this room right now who have messed up their lives in one form or another, who've made wrong choices and decisions, who have done things or not done things, or things that have happened to them that have landed them in places that they never ever dreamed that they would be in. And you know what? We can all sit here and point a finger, and we can judge, and we can be harsh, and we can not be supportive, and all of that, which is utterly, utterly wrong, because if you begin to understand it in this way, we are all in the same boat. We all have lives that are not perfect and are not in the place that we wanted them to be in one form or another. And if we aren't accepting that, then we are in denial. None of us have got those perfect 3.2 children lives. It's a myth in that way. And it is irrelevant because it's not the question, Yeshua. He does not ask us, were you perfect? Was your life good? Were you happy? That's not the question Yeshua is asking. He says, good and faithful servant. Did you stick with God? Did you walk away? Did you toss God on the scrap heap? Did you decide to do your own thing like Adam and Chava and take over control of your life? Did your life ultimately, will your life ultimately have a positive impact for good? Will it ultimately leave this world a better place? Will your life bring others closer to a walk with the Lord? Or will it just be chaos to the very end? The meaning of your life is hidden in God's will. It's always been hidden in God's will. It's never been anywhere else. You may have thought you had the power to control your life, but it's always in him. We need to seek him, and ultimately there's a question, I think, today, even if you do not yet believe in God in here this morning. Because the same question applies. Have you found a meaning at all for your very existence beyond the mere fact that you are alive? Because God who directs the steps of all people. But what are we going to leave behind, people? Ultimately, this is the final thought. Will we leave behind anything more than mere footprints? Because that's our choice. We can depart this world and all we will look and see behind is just mere footprints. A mere qualification. We existed. What a waste of a life. That's not what our lives are meant to be. Our lives are more than mere footprints. Our choice is, will you let Adonai walk with you? Or shall we say, will you choose to walk with him? Because then you'll have more than footprints. Your life will have had meaning. Your life will have had purpose. In the grand scheme of what humanity is through the ages, your life will have had a meaning and a purpose, why you were born and why you were here. But you'll only find that in him, the one who knows your tomorrow. Because you don't.